Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on this Tuesday. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor, we're all here inside our Las Vegas studios. Thank you for joining us. Big show lined up here for you today. We got a little four-down territory at 7:30. We got Scott Kennedy from Atlanta. We'll talk about the Falcons as well as the Broncos. He does a podcast for both teams. We'll talk to him at 8 o'clock. We'll also get your thoughts up at 702-365-9200. We'll go around the league with national football writer Miles Simmons with ProFootballTalk.com at 9 o'clock. And we'll also get your thoughts up on X at R&R 920 AM. Don't forget, we will give you that word of the day so you can be a part of the summer of fun brought to you by Planet Nissan. Well, what's on deck this week? A six-night, five-day trip over to Nashville. Nashville, the home of country music, the Grand Ole Opry. We actually hook you up with a Jack Daniel's distillery tour and $750 cash. We'll give you that magic word in just a few minutes here on Raider Nation Radio. Well, there were a lot of magic words yesterday for the Lakers press conference for J.J. Redick, who came out in a quiet ball of fire. But I think this is a signal that the Lakers are headed in a good direction after yesterday's press conference. Just that you know that you got somebody that's going to come in that you know is smart, that you know is driven. But maybe we just didn't know too much about J.J. Redick. If you hadn't heard his podcast, I think you know it now after hearing that press conference yesterday.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't any surprise. I wasn't impressed or not impressed. That's the J.J. that I knew when I covered him when he was with the Clippers. And at that time, prior to him joining the Clippers, you know, I didn't have any kind of notion of who he was as a person. You always hear, you know, he was the Duke kid, the scrappy Duke kid. Anytime you come out of that program, you're going to be either hated or loved, and there's going to be preconceived notions of who you are. That's, you know, you have to laugh at it. It's just fans being fans for the most part. So I literally had no idea who J.J. was as a person. And from the moment that I first met him and got to know him and was covering him, just blown away about how smart he was and intelligent he was and savvy he was. And you could see how he was able to operate. We've talked about that locker room being an extremely volatile locker room with a lot of huge egos. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Doc Rivers, Matt Barnes. It was just a combustible place, and he was able to kind of float around and, develop relationships with everybody. He was somebody that everybody liked and everybody respected. So the JJ that I saw yesterday at that press conference, was the JJ that I got to know. So not surprised at all, and happy for him that he quote unquote won the press conference. I think there was, you know, valid concern. You know, he is a coach that's going into his first turn as a head coach. There's always going to be some concerns until there isn't any concern. I think he's got time on his side. But they made a good point yesterday. Not having coaching, you can, the two concepts aren't mutually exclusive. Not having coaching experience in the NBA, but having a vast amount of experience in the NBA. And okay, he certainly does that.
Yeah.
15 years in the NBA, playing for a bunch of different coaches, playing for some high-level programs. You go back to his college days playing for one of the greatest coaches of all time, Coach Krzyzewski, who's been a sounding board for him. So just because he hasn't any practical experience coaching at this level, there isn't anybody that's better prepared to deal with this situation than somebody that's lived it for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. And experienced pretty much everything that you can at that level. So I'm not too worried about the fact that he hasn't actually been a head coach. I think that'll come. There will be a learning curve. He doesn't know everything. Antonio Pierce is in the same exact situation here with the Raiders. A brief time as an assistant coach. He hasn't been an assistant coach very long either, Antonio Pierce. Right. But you get the sense talking to him that he gets it, that he understands it. And his time as a player and as a leader and the type of persona that he has as a player should and will carry over as a head coach. And I think the same things for J.J. Redick. But I also think it was extremely healthy, and we're going to hear what he said. You know, that the press conference started out great, and it never got out of hand or anything like that. But there was one question in particular, that I think pushed a little bit of a button with him, and it had to do with, are there any perceptions of you that you want to dispel as a first-time NBA coach? And I loved his answer. I honestly did, because it's a healthy way for all of us to look at things in terms of, we worry so much about what the what outside people are thinking. But here's JJ with that.
And I've certainly heard everything. You know, it's been a really interesting 6 weeks or so, just in terms of, you know, being part of the engagement farming industry. You know, it's been really interesting. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question, because I really don't give a honestly. I want to coach the Lakers. I want to coach the team. I don't want to dispel anything. I don't. I want to become a great coach in the NBA, and I want to win championships, and I want my players to maximize their careers.
Yeah, I love it. Because,
and I don't give a blank about anything else was the final comment. It says it all.
Right, because that is what you should be worried about. You shouldn't be worried about, you know, and I love Bill Plaschke. He's one of my good friends, and he knows this. He's written an article that was extremely critical of the hiring, and I love Bill. But who cares what Bill says? Who cares what Vinny Bonsignor says on the airwaves about the hire at the end of the day, or Clay Baker, or anybody, Stephen A. Smith, ESPN? It doesn't matter. None of that matters. The only thing that does matter is doing the best job you possibly can, getting the most out of this roster. And I think that the whole plan is for him to try to maximize what they have right now. But also, there's going to come a time where LeBron James is no longer on this team. Could be this year if he doesn't resign. I think he will. But that's still going to be a short-lived proposition, maybe 2 years. And then you have to move on to a new horizon. And I think they want J.J. Redick as the leader of that next journey. And all that matters is going to be the people in that building, the people that you're working with, the players, the coaches, the staff. Pat Riley used to do a thing where he would stand up in front of the Lakers and ball his fist and basically signifying, this is us right here. This is us, the fist. Everybody outside of this fist is really in some way or form a peripheral opponent. There's going to be the opponents that we play, the fans, the media, people that are trying to break you up, people that have opinions. And if you give life to any of that, then they become a real opponent to you. And don't give that life. And this is a message for everyone walking through life, whatever it is that you do. You got to stop worrying about what other people think, what other people are saying. Just put your nose down, do the best job that you possibly can, be the best version of yourself that you possibly can, whether it's as somebody that is an employee, somebody who owns a business, a father, a husband, whatever the case is, and just to be the best possible version of you. And at the end of the day, you count how many wins you have and how many losses you have, which you're going to have both. And just focus on what you need to focus on, what is really in your control. Anything that else that anybody is saying, and I fully agree with them, who cares what your perception of me is right now? It's not that I disrespect those opinions. It's just I'm not going to put any life into them, because it doesn't matter to the task on hand.
The thoughts from social media, they were all over the place. A lot of people just felt like, you know, J.J. Redick needs to clean up his mouth.
Oh, boy.
This is unprofessional.
Oh, my goodness.
Also, people are saying they enjoyed the fact that he's showing more emotion than other coaches have done at this point. But at the same time, when you ask a question of, like, how do you dispel the notions and misconceptions about you? Well, by winning.
Right, yeah.
Like, there's nothing I can do or say in this press conference that's going to do any of that.
Right.
It's just going to add more fuel to the fire if you're not buying in already.
And furthermore, I've learned in my life, and J.J. Redick is a perfect example of that, because, again, when you play at Duke, and he was a high-level player at Duke, there's just this perception of you. We know what we're talking about. They're the anointed ones. They're the entitled ones. They're the Dukies. You know, you always want to beat them. And, you know, obviously he played during some heyday years with Duke. So you have to close your mind off to the hate. And when I say hate, I mean fan hate. You know, because you know, that's what it is. There's some people that obviously take it too far, but okay. You can't give it again. You just have to accept the fact that there's half the world's going to be for you. Half the world is going to be against you. I remember Tommy Lasorda had the great quote, you know, why don't you complain? He goes, why? Because pretty much 90% of the world could care less about my complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And 10% of the world, you know, the people probably are happy that I have these issues that I'm complaining about. So at the end of the day, what's the purpose? There's no upside he was being facetious, but he's right. That's the other part. 90% of the world doesn't care. And the ones that are against you or already, you know, saying that this is a failure, the heck with them. Don't worry about what they're saying. And again, this goes to everybody out there, myself included. Sometimes I do get caught up, you know, in what they're saying in social media. You write a critical article, you make a mistake, or you say something that is disagreeable, you know, to people out there, and they're going to let you have it. And if you give it life, then you're playing into it. And that's going to cause a lot of inner turmoil and just affect you, basically. It does. It's you have to turn a deaf ear to that, and you have to literally be like JJ said, I don't care. And as long as you don't care, you're going to be fine, because you're not allowing that to affect you.
More from Reddick.
And they will all be important as I build out my staff, as we think about the people we want to draft and get in free agency, and as we think about player development. It's all about those things. When I think about the NBA today, you know, the game is evolving, and it's evolving fast. And one of the things in coaching that I think you have to be is adaptable. You have to be adaptable to your roster. You have to be adaptable in game planning against your opponent. And that's one of the things I really will strive to be. Lastly, I just want to say, like, sitting in this seat, I know what the expectations are. Lakers fans have some of the most passionate fans around the world, and the expectation is a championship. And so it's my job, it's our staff's job, it's Rob's job, it's all of us to deliver a championship caliber team. That's what I signed up for.
JJ Redick from yesterday's press conference. Well, the Lakers are not the only team to be hiring a head coach with just a few days before the NBA draft. I wonder how different things would be if the direction was it was Dan Hurley's press conference today or yesterday, or how they will, you know, direct themselves into the off season. One way is for certain is that the draft is coming up, and everyone feels like, you know, LeBron James' son is going to be a focal point of the Lakers draft. Mm-hmm. I wonder how this changes things or the course of that direction, whether it was Hurley or JJ Redick, or maybe it has nothing to do with either head coach.
You know, it's interesting about Bronny, because, you know, there's this notion, well, he's not an NBA player right now. Neither was Marc Gasol when the Lakers made him a second-round pick. Go look at what the reports were. He was fat. He was out of shape. He was a bad body guy that needed a lot of work. And they basically stashed him in Spain, you know, for a couple mm-hmm. of years. And he got his body in order. And when they traded for Powell, they traded the rights to Mark to Memphis for Paul Gasol, and he turned out to be an all-star caliber player for years and years and years. Obviously, Bronny's not an NBA player right now, but if you talk to people that actually know the game, they feel like he does have a future, and that's where you draft. In the second round, you're typically drafting guys that probably aren't ready right now, but you're getting them, and especially now, there's so many roster spots. You've got 15 roster spots, which is more than it used to be 12. Now you got three more. Plus you've got your two-way contracts. You've got your G League team.
Yeah.
So there's time to develop him. And the word that I'm at least hearing is that he's got a chance to. He's not going to be like a volume scorer, but there's mm-hmm. so much value in the NBA nowadays on guys that can defend, that can handle the ball a little bit, that can shoot. You don't have to be a superstar. They're showing the Boston Celtics, you know, the Dallas Mavericks, all these good young teams, and in the Boston Celtics case, a championship caliber team, are showing that you need role players now, especially with how the money is being governed and managed in the NBA with the first apron, the second apron. You know, when you're talking about signing multiple star players to multiple big time contracts, you're going to pay a huge price. There's new rules in place that's taking this game away from the collection of star players, and just, you know, if you go down that road as an organization, as an owner, you're going to have to pay all these tax thresholds and double what you're actually paying. That's a lot to ask for an owner to do. So more and more teams are going the opposite direction, where you've got you need star players, but you also need role players.
Oh my God, you need role players more than anything right now.
And inexpensive role players. Yeah. So Bronny isn't a guy that's going to step on the floor next year as a rookie, but two or three years down the road, he's got the work ethic, he's got the intelligence, he's got his measurables at the scouting combine in Chicago. Athletically, were really good. He impressed a lot of people at that scouting combine. So I know a lot of people are going to roll their eyes because if the Lakers or anybody else draft him, but think of this as a long term in investment, which is typically what you do anyway in the second round. So I who cares what somebody sitting at home on his couch is going to say about the Lakers or whoever else signing Bronny James? Were you in Chicago? Were you evaluating alongside other NBA people to really assess where he was? And don't give me the, well, he only averaged 4 points a game, at USC. That doesn't matter. It's what is in front of him. And last year he was coming back from a catastrophic situation where, you know, he had the cardiac arrest at a USC practice. I mean, it was just kind of getting his legs back under him, getting back into playing. So
last
year,
rush that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So yes, you're going to have people mocking that pick if it's the Lakers or anybody else. But to JJ's point, who gives a bleep?
Well, that's the whole thing. You just have to go and singularly I have one focus. And for a guy like J.J. Redick to, like, avoid these questions, keep popping up over and over again, that's the way to do it. You have to have some edge. And that the answers like that help silence those questions.
So
you can just move forward with the rest of what you really want to talk about.
And actually, I don't think he avoided it. He met it head on. I don't care. Whatever your perception is of me, I'm not here to change it. I don't care what you think. He was saying it in the most respectful way, even though he did drop an F-bomb. But he was sending a message like, I don't care. So say it. Say whatever you want. Ask me if you want. This is going to be my answer. I'm not going to say, oh, I don't want to answer that question. Or, I'm hoping that, I'm just telling you right now, this is my answer. I don't care about those perceptions.
You don't leave yourself open. End the question with the answer that is definitive, and everyone will remember you for it. And that keeps it from everyone asking you
again. This job is hard enough as it is, and this doesn't go just for JJ, but even Antonio Pierce here with the Raiders, you know, being a first-time, full-time head coach with very minimal experience as even an assistant coach. He went from linebacker coach for a year and a half in the NFL. That's it. That's his NFL experience. Coaching wise, but his whole, career, you have to add that into it because that plays hugely into it. He was the leader of the defenses that he played on at his various stops. So no, he doesn't have the practical experience of being a head coach, but he gets the NFL.
Why do we often feel that professional players have no business coaching sometimes? You ever notice that? Like, there's always seemed to be some sort of, like, I don't know, everyone kind of holds back and reserves thought about, can a professional player, a person who has put their life's dedication towards one sport, learning everything you can, playing at the highest level, and even achieving some of the highest goals, that they're still not quite qualified to be a head coach.
Right.
I just never get that.
Especially the ones who coaches know, and they'll be the, I'm sure Antonio Pierce was told this, you're going to be a coach one day.
Yes.
And I know J.J. Redick was told that multiple times by multiple people that should know. And guys like, that's why guys end up becoming, whether a Dan Campbell, remember he got mocked.
People were laughing, and they were laughing at the Lions because they were like, this guy, he's unhinged. He's a player. They wouldn't take him seriously, even though he had been one of the prized assistants on several staffs.
Right.
But a guy that just did some time to kind of ingratiate him into coaching. But do we question that now?
Right.
In fact, some teams are trying to find, we need a Dan Campbell on our team to lead.
That's exactly. That's how quickly that turns around. There's all sorts of ways to go about it. You know, you got your Sean McVay, but even Sean McVay, he didn't play in the NFL, but he was the player of the year in Georgia. Ahead of the wide receiver from Georgia Tech, who's the Lions wide receiver?
Yeah, Calvin Johnson.
even Sean laughed at that. He was an option quarterback, and they won the state championship. So he won the award. He's like, come on, Calvin. Yeah, but he ends up going to Miami of Ohio, and he was a really good player there. Obviously, he had a ceiling. Look at how, he's not the tallest guy, the biggest guy. So his career panned out in college, but he was still a player. Kyle Shanahan has a playing background. So, just because you don't reach the pinnacle of your profession in terms of being a player doesn't mean you can't coach, and just because you have doesn't mean you can't coach either. There's too many examples of both entities being really successful. I think it comes down to the leadership. It comes down to are you going to set aside your ego and surround yourself with the great staff? I remember when McVay got to the Rams, the first thing he did was hired Wade Phillips, a former head coach, as his defensive coordinator. And there were literally times in his first season where the offense would come off the field and you would go, "Where's Sean?" And Sean's over there on the bench coaching up his offense, and Wade Phillips was on the sideline kind of being the head coach. He purposely did that because he knew, "I got to pour everything into this offense. That's why they hired me, to get this offense finally fixed.
I need to find people who I can trust, smart people.
If a timeout needs to be called or whatever." It didn't take long. It only lasted for about a year and a half. And then, Sean ended up evolving as a head coach for both sides of the ball. But he knew what he didn't know at that point, and he knew the help that he needed and what his job was going to require, and kind of the support that he was going to need. If you have that kind of an eagle and are wired the right way, you're going to make the right decisions on your coaching staff. But as long as you believe in your plan, that's part of your plan, and execute that plan and have full conviction in it, then special things can happen. It's always going to come down to also, who do you have available to play? I mean, every sport that we're talking about is ultimately talent-driven. And whatever talent level you have to work with, can you maximize whatever it is that you have? That's the job. That is literally the job. Whether it's a championship caliber roster, are you going to get the most out of that? Or if it's a 30-win team caliber roster, are you going to get those 30 wins out of that team? Or are you going to underachieve or meet your expectations or your ceiling? And I think that J.J. Redick has a good chance to be one of those coaches that gets the most out of his teams.
Coming up next is Four Down Territory and the keyword of the day for your Summer of Fun qualifier for that trip to Nashville. We'll give it to you in 6 minutes' time on the gate.
Play action again. Eyes downfield, over the middle. Batted up in the air. Pickle Spillane! His second interception of the night! And he's tackled at the 42-yard line! Amik Robertson got his hand on the football to bat it up in the air, and Robert Spillane was in the right place at the right time.
Thanks to Raiders Radio Network with the call. All right, here we go. It's time for the Summer Fun Word of the Day. Text the word buffet, B-U-F-F-E-T, buffet. Text that in to 702-365-9200. Why? Because you qualify for the six-day, five-night vacation to Nashville, the home of country music, the home of the Grand Ole Opry, the home of the Jack Daniel's Distillery. Come on! Not only do you get the six-day, five-night trip to Nashville, you get trips to the Jack Daniel's Distillery and $650 spending cash. $750 cash. And if you can't make it, they hook you up with just $3,000. Boom, right off the bat. I get it. It's awesome. It's the Summer of Fun. It's brought to you by Planet Nissan. I've been to the Jim Beam Distillery. And let me tell you, that is an amazing, awesome trip. An unforgettable time. Actually, I went to the Stroh's Brewery once for their little tour. And that's one of the fun ones where they actually feed you beer before and after the trip. It's still the same. It's Stroh's, so it's not like a big deal. But bring it in. 702-365-9200. 702-365-9200. Text the word buffet for your chance to qualify for that Summer of Fun vacation. All right. Are we ready, folks? Time for four down territory.
First down, and it's first and 10, Las Vegas.
Here on Raider Nation Radio, we'll talk to Scott Kennedy from Atlanta at the top of the next hour at 8 o'clock. A longtime writer. He was formerly with Scout.com. He does a great podcast for both the Falcons as well as the Broncos. And an interesting story just kind of coming out, where you wonder, like, how did Michael Penix's OTAs and minicamp go? And there were some thoughts here that even Mark Raimondi from ESPN says he has also been plagued with inconsistency going back to days in his Washington Husky era, missing some touch passes. Not a huge surprise for a rookie quarterback, but Penix has mostly worked with the team's backups behind veteran Taylor Heinicke, seemingly second string behind Cousins at this point. Now, everyone wants to ease the rookies in. There's not a whole lot of expectations for Penix to take over right away, obviously. But do you feel that, you know, a guy like Penix may be a little underwhelming just because he's got to learn everything all at once, and maybe there is a little pressure for him to start just because the anxiety around Kirk Cousins is always kind of looming, that the injury from his Achilles could always come back to bother him? How do you feel like people are judging Penix in Atlanta as far as the OTAs and minicamp? And we'll get more from this from Scott, but these reports were kind of like, well, isn't he supposed to be kind of working with Taylor Heinicke anyway, and more or less?
Well, I mean, first of all, zero pressure for him to play right away. He's a rookie. To your point, he's learning a brand new system. It's not going to always look good at this point for any rookie. How many? Just out of curiosity, Clay, how many interceptions did Peyton Manning throw his rookie year?
Oh, I don't know, but it was awful. It was a bad rookie year.
Come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean,
I get the reporting. We have to report what we see, but he's a first-year quarterback, you know, involved in his first minicamp and first OTAs. There's no, you don't have to rush him. This is gonna you drafted him with. Obviously, Kirk Cousins already is on the roster. You're going to be able to. It's the beauty of it is you're going to be able to allow Michael Penix to grow and prosper and learn, kind of like Jordan Love did. I bet you if we went back and looked at Jordan Love's rookie OTAs and minicamp, they were probably really bad, but there was no pressure for him to start. That was the plan. Mm-hmm. The Falcons have a plan in place for Michael Penix. Nobody's going to care what he looked like in May and June of 2024. Come 2026, when he's probably going to be the starting quarterback for the Falcons. So, I get this. We have this 24-hour news cycle that we have to feed continually. But for it to be couched in any sort of a way, like anybody needs to be worried right now because Michael Penix, you know, didn't have a sparkling OTA or minicamp. And even if he did, it wouldn't. I mean, it's great. It's fine. It's part of the process, but he's not expected to start this year. And even if he's not ready to start, if Kirk Cousins is limited by the Achilles, or if he gets re-injured, that's why you have a guy like Heinicke on the roster, just in case Michael Penix can't be the guy that steps up and plays. So zero, less than zero to be worried about right now.
I guess people always have that consternation when you're a first-round quarterback, right? And you're taken as high as you are. And maybe because it was kind of a little bit of a surprise that he was taken. But let's not forget some of the good measurables he had in college and the accuracy and all the other good stuff that people really did find very intriguing. But there is always a lot of folks that when draft day comes and they had, you know, a different grade for Penix, now they actually went like, oh, if there was any sort of like slight, you know, something that went off the rails, something that didn't quite match up to like how a first round quarterback should look in OTAs or camp.
Right.
Like it's like, oh, I told you. Well, I told you so from the very beginning that this guy was not a first round quarterback.
Those are just people who don't know the game. if they're naive enough to think that it's going to be perfect right off the bat, or that you're going to make something, you know, really out of nothing at this point, then you're just telling me without telling me you have zero concept of what this is all about. So that's on you.
Yeah, it's funny to think how wide and crazy this could get. But I understand at the same time that for the public, and we'll ask more about from Scott Kennedy what he thinks. It's something that is going to be wait and see. And you know what? I still think he could surprise you even, you know, in his rookie year if he is thrust into a starting role. I still think he's going to be somebody that can surprise folks with his arm. Even with the medical history, he's somebody that I still think is worthy of a first round pick.
I go back to, you know, if you talk to people with the Chargers, Justin Herbert's first year, remember who was the starting quarterback coming out of training camp that year? It was Tyrod Taylor, not Justin Herbert. Why? Because there were people in the organization who just didn't felt, they weren't worried, but they were like, we don't know if Justin's ready to be the starter right now. He didn't get the starting job until that medical emergency happened on the sideline 5 minutes, 10 minutes before a game started, where Tyrod got a shot and, you know, it caused some heart issues that he had to get rushed to a hospital in an ambulance. And they had to turn to Justin Herbert right there on the spot and say, you got to go in and play. You know, and never look back. And there were people in the organization who just didn't feel like Justin was ready to take on that role based on what they had seen in the classroom and in training camp and all that. So that's the other part of it. You just never know. There's players that, and I give some grace for Gardner Minshew. I suspect that he's one of those players that's probably not the greatest practice player. And I've seen this a million times too. Guys that just aren't. But you put him out there and turn the lights on. That's what. Here's a quarterback to me that's going to be a perfect example of that. Caleb Williams with the Bears. You know, he's a guy that the magic happens when the game happens. When you all of a sudden everything's closed off and he's got to be Houdini out there. You don't see stuff like that in practice. They'll blow the whistle. You can't get touched anyway. So all of that is kind of limited in practice. You don't really. You're not able to see the full throttle of that. It only unfolds in an actual game when the lights are on and the real bullets are flying and there's an actual defense over there and you have to fight for survival that the magic happens. Kind of the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. I would bet you there were some rough days when it was just limited to him sitting in the pocket and making plays, but not able to do what he does best at times, and that's improvise and go bank plays. So there's guys that don't look so good in practice because they're really not doing what they do in games and what they're put here to do. And as I was watching Gardner Minshew, I was like, I just have a feeling that he's one of the more of a gamer than a practice player. And sometimes you just have to sort through that as a coach and kind of understand, you know, that there's guys that are wired like that, that just for whatever reason turn the lights on, and that's when we're going to get, you know, the real Ronnie Lott or whoever we're talking about.
And for the same amount of players that are able to shine when the game is on, and maybe not so much during practice, there is that opposite effect where there are some great practice players.
For sure.
And as Pritch has often said, he's like, the field gets to them. When the game starts, they are not the same player. They actually seem to be diminished.
Yeah.
And all the athletic ability that you saw throughout the week, and you feel really good about this game plan, but then when it comes time to hike the ball and blow the whistle, they're not the same player.
Jerry West used to tell me, you know, he would look at guys sometimes that were averaging 25 points a game on a losing team. He goes, that's great. You know, when you're shooting it as many times as you are and the pressure's really not on, you're not on a great team. So it's not like there's high expectations and, you know, and the defensive. Can you give me 15 on a championship team? Can that player, this environment where there's championships at stake and there's all sorts of pressure, can that translate? You don't have to average 25 points. I'm concerned that you're going to be able to average 15 points in this environment and make a great, great contribution on this kind of a team. So to your point, there's guys that look all world in practice that suck during the games and vice versa.
We're back after this on Raider Nation Radio. Make sure you text in the word buffet to 702-365-9200 for your chance to qualify for the Summer of Fun, the 6-day, 5-night trip to Nashville. Back after this with another story from Four Down Territory, which includes the Raiders.
Now back to Clay Baker with your morning tailgate on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Play action on 2nd and 12.
All right, Four Down Territory coming your way here on Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Scott Kennedy will join us at the top of the next hour in about 10 minutes or so. We'll talk to him about the Falcons and the Broncos as we go around the league with Miles Simmons at 9 a.m. here on Raider Nation Radio. The story that came out from the NFL.com, 5 most overblown storylines and 5 storylines that deserve more attention. First story on the ladder is Tua the next $50 million quarterback pass. Number 2, the Raiders quarterback situation. Okay, there are aspects, the story goes on to say, that the Raiders I find really interesting, and I believe Antonio Pierce has the team headed in the right direction. The defense has a look of a top 12 unit, and the receiving weapons are good enough for any team to compete with. But it begs the question, what is the long-term plan at quarterback?
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
That's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
You're turning a blind eye to it or not being completely, you know, honest if you think that this thing is solved with one of these top two quarterbacks. It can be, no question.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I contend that chances are the Raiders will still be in the quarterback business at the end of this year. There's examples of teams that have made the playoffs that moved on from their quarterback because they felt like a better option was out there. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders, are in that situation at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. And we also know that the 2025 quarterback class looks a little cloudy at best. And in comparison to what the 24 class did. But here's the thing. There's these qualifiers for some of these stories. He says, the Raiders might make it through the season and realize they need to invest in a veteran if either Tua or Dak hit the market. But the decision to pass on a quarterback in this year's draft when six quarterbacks went in the first round might force their hands. But the decision to pass on the quarterback is because there was nothing to decide.
There was no decision.
There was no one there left.
Yeah.
That they wanted to go and invest in that they didn't feel they already had.
And honestly, we don't know after Jaden Daniels and let's say Michael Penix were drafted ahead of him. We don't know that there was anyone in and around that. I don't know that they would have drafted J.J. McCarthy. I don't know that they would have drafted Bo Nix. That would have been a decision. They didn't even have that decision to make. I don't even know that they liked them enough at 13 to have drafted them at 13. So that would have been an evaluation issue. But the fact of the matter is, it never even got to that because, by the time they drafted all those quarterbacks, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Drake May and Caleb Williams had all been drafted before they picked at number 13. And the notion that they decided not to trade up, that's an idiotic, lazy take to begin with. They did try. They just got shut out.
There was no – what other team would have, tried to push themselves further into the, into the talks and conversations to trade up more than the Raiders?
Why would Washington or the Patriots agree to move all the way down to number 13?
Right. Right.
Especially knowing that they needed a quarterback just as badly as the Raiders did, maybe even more so.
So they could get a right tackle of the future? I mean, no one's doing that.
Right. So that wasn't a decision. That was a circumstance. That was a situation that they had to deal with. And they, kind of reluctantly so. They really did want Jaden Daniels. But that street was completely closed off to them because Washington's like, yeah, so do we. And we're not going to let this opportunity, slip through our fingers. Not for your 13th pick, not for the Giants' 6th pick, not for the Vikings, where were they, 11th pick? Not for any pick. We're staying right here at number 3. There's nothing that you can say or do that can convince us. So, the decision to not draft a quarterback, you really need to explain yourself a little bit better by adding the qualifier of, this was the situation that the Raiders... It's just a poor way of constructing that argument because that's not the argument. That's not what happened. They didn't choose not to draft a quarterback. They chose, after a certain couple of quarterbacks were selected ahead of them, that there wasn't any other quarterback after those six quarterbacks were taken that they felt that, would have been a good pick at number 13. And furthermore, you know how much criticism they would have gotten had they who was
Spencer Rattler? Did they need to go to the Spencer Rattler line?
Where did he get drafted?
We got somebody.
Where did he get drafted?
He got drafted mid round to the Saints, right?
Yeah, like later, way later on. Mm-hmm. So, just a poorly constructed argument.
It's one that deserves more attention
and
not overblown. It's a little overblown. We'll take a break and come back. Scott Kennedy joins us from the ATL. We'll talk about the Falcons and the Broncos next.